Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello, my name is Danny Russell. I am the managing editor of DRaysBay.com. And today I am joined by Ian Malinowski.
Hello.
What's going on, man?
Oh, we have a signing. We have something to talk about.
And it might be something important to talk about. I don't really know. This is weird. This is a February signing happening in mid-December. It's Michael Wacha, which... none of the other beat writers wanted to say his name on the interview we just did with him. Everyone's like, hey, Michael. I think everyone's kind of like unsure. I'm like, can I say Wacha? Does it sound like that to come out of my mouth? Do it Wacha?
Wacha. Wacha.
Wacha this way. This is a weird signing. So it's $3 million, and this is the kind of signing you typically see to round out a roster when you're not sure exactly where you're going to get your innings from right before spring training starts.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a weird offseason just in general. I don't think that people know what they're looking for, what money they have. So there's just a ton of uncertainty in what you're looking for when. I've sort of been a fan of jumping early at signings before teams realize that they're going to have more money than they think, but this isn't a lot of money, so I'm not sure how that fits in there.
Well, I do wonder if it's a lot of money, because if you follow the journey through all of the free agent pitching signings, you've got Charlie Morton at the top, and that's $15 million. The next step down from Morton would be Drew Smyly, who seems to have demonstrated that he's recovered from injury, and that gets $11 million. Then you take a step down from that, and it's $8 million for Robbie Ray, who is not good. The next step down from that is San Francisco's most recent signing at $6 million. And that was, I just blanked. Same agent as Chris Archer.
Yeah, that was.
Desclafani.
Desclafani.
Yeah, there we go. It's always jarbled up in my brain when I try to. I'm always like, is it Scandalfini? Like, how do I?
Yeah, and I think that the weird thing, that the thing that makes it hard to sort of put Wacha on this list is that there's obvious upside, there's obvious past production, like there's a legitimate possible band in the range of projections that has him as better than a lot of those guys. There's also a legitimate band that has him as worse. The median is probably a little bit lower, but there's plenty of upside in Wacha. So I'm really I'm not sure where to rank him with these guys. How far off?
Well, that's why I went to millions of dollars, right? Because I would feel like the market is speaking for itself for these early movers, because there haven't been a lot of starting pitchers signing, and the Rays committing to a starting pitcher like this is interesting. I asked Wacha about it, and he said the Rays so far said they will be very honest with me about how my stuff is going mid-year, but as of right now, they've committed to me as a starter. And that's like the language that they've had when they've discussed him pitching for the Rays. And it's worth saying also that Eric Nander went into his Zoom call saying this was our priority signing, or a priority signing for the organization, someone they wanted in the starting rotation because they felt like they could do a lot with what he had. Wacha talked about Kyle Snyder had a massive plan laid out for him. He came and stayed in St. Pete for a bit and just hung out with Kyle Snyder to find out what they thought they could do with his stuff. He's only 29. This is a one-year deal. It's not a lot of money, but you're buying into a system. And, I mean, the Rays have always needed that. They need players who want to be in Tampa Bay. And so at this point, it feels like this is a Kyle Snyder signing.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that he's a player who fits well into some of the things that Rays do with pitchers and like the types of plans that the Rays roll out for pitchers. If we look at that stuff itself, like the first thing that jumps
yeah,
out
well, yeah, is yeah. That, so we should pop the hood, because at surface level, you are really concerned if you just pull up his FanGraphs page, for instance.
Sure.
His final year with the Cardinals in 2019, and then his 8 appearances with the Mets in 2020, which also includes some injury. There's a lot of injury concern with Waka, and that's kind of built into his price. But 20%+ home runs per fly ball rate. He got bit by the home run bug in 2 consecutive seasons, which makes it feel like a trend. His ERA, 6.6 last year. The year before that, 4.7. His FIPS, if you'd prefer to use a more independent metric that focuses on his performance, it gets worse.
It's not good.
On the net between 2019 and 20, he's worth negative wins above replacement. So it's hard to pop his stats up, his surface level stats, and be like, yeah, I'm excited about this. So what's under the hood?
Yeah, so like if I sort of take 2018 as the last year when he was more or less what we think of as his healthy, good self, and who knows, because there's a whole string of injuries in there. So I don't know what he's felt like in any of these years. But in 2018 and before that, he had a really good fastball. It was like a low to mid really mid 90s fastball with a lot of ride on it. The type of fastball that the Rays use up in the zone with pitchers over and over and over.
Sure.
A kind of interesting thing about him, he's never struck out quite as many people as I figured. As you figure he should, looking at that stuff, and part of that, quite honestly, is that he's pitched down in the zone with the fastball more than I think he will on the Rays.
He's thrown a lot of changeups high, right?
Yes, yeah. So he's sort of in the middle of the zone with all the pitches, in the bottom of the zone with the fastball more than maybe he should. And I think you just raise those sights towards the top, and we'll pick up a few extra strikeouts easily without changing anything. The complicating thing, though, is that 2019 and 2020, that fastball hasn't had the same ride as it had before that. So there's like, one would really hope that the Rays are able to get him back feeling good and get back to that fastball spin the way he did throughout his whole career before 2019 and 2020.
Yeah, you'd have to think, if Kyle Snyder walks in with a presentation on that, he thinks he can harness that fastball too.
Right. Right. Like that, that's the first thing that's just jumping off. Like, that's a part of the plan.
So his primary pitch fastball. Then is the changeup.
Right. So it's a good changeup. It's a changeup that it has above average movement. It doesn't drop in speed a huge amount. It's not the biggest movement throughout Waka's career, but it's solidly above average. I think Waka has good feel for it, good arm speed. It's a pitch he's comfortable with. The thing that's sort of interesting is that while Waka has struggled these past 2 years, like that with his fastball, that changeup has actually improved its movement a little bit. I think it's a better changeup that he showed in 2020 than what he was able to show in.
Does it function more as a breaking ball then? Because it's not really dependent on his fastball.
And I mean, I think the Rays can look at it as functioning similarly to how they did with Jalen Beeks's changeup, where they're working with it as movement separation, not necessarily just velocity separation off of that fastball, and also like he can pitch off that changeup first. At least Beeks does. Beeks will throw that changeup 3 times in a row if he thinks the batter has trouble seeing it. I think Waka can do a similar thing. Waka also has a really hard cutter with decent movement for how hard it is, which is another thing the Rays use over and over. I think, and that's another pitch which, similarly to the changeup, has sort of gotten sneakily, slowly better these past 2 years while the fastballs suffer. This is sort of where I think if you can snap that fastball a little bit better, it's going to have good pitches to play off of. It looks like it started with a very good mix if he can actually throw it.
So mix implies more pitches, right? So what is left here? Because he was a different pitcher in terms of the rest of his arsenal in 2020.
Yeah, he Waka also has historically thrown a big curve, big overhand 12.6, 12.5, 4.5, 5.5, whatever the fraction would be, but an up and down curve, which is not a great pitch, but has been mm-hmm. a decent pitch, and it's a pitch that he's thrown a lot, thrown it around 15% of the time right. over his entire career.
Significant piece of his arsenal.
It's just sort of disappeared. Sorry, it's 10% over the. Over his entire career, 50% in some of the older years, but it's a real pitch for him that was not there at all in 2020. I don't know why it wasn't there. If it was intentional, if it was a thing he didn't have the feel for.
Yeah. He rolled into the Mets shop and they were like, don't throw that, throw this instead.
Yeah. I think keeping with the Beeks comparison, the Rays have not leaned on that type of curve with Beeks. I'm curious on if it's in their plan to work it back in or to focus on the other three somewhat better pitches. But if they want to use it, it's a pitch that has been there.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Yeah, it'd be interesting if they could resurrect it and, you know, what the spin rates look like and whether or not they actually think it's a good pitch. The Mets clearly didn't. And his stats would say, you know, maybe in 2019 it was, I don't know. Yeah, it's confusing. Okay, so his new breaking ball then is instead, it's a cutter slider, right?
Are we allowed
to say
yeah,
slider
yeah,
on the podcast?
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
He's always had that. But it's right there at 88 miles per hour. It has good downward movement for a pitch at 88 miles per hour. It's not big downward movement for a slider or overall. He's really done a great job against lefties, jamming lefties up on the hands with that cutter. Kind of the same way Fleming does against righties, where Fleming jams them up and in with the cutter coming in on their hands, drops the changeup down and away from them. Waka's done that same thing against opposite handers, which I think is part of like why he's a career reverse split guy. He's able to force lefties to defend the whole zone. I don't think he's ever quite forced righties to defend the whole zone in the same way. So like that's another part of what I imagine is Snyder's plan for him to figure out which pitches in which locations can force those righties' minds to have to cover everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like it. I mean, I like that aspect. I like the theory of this signing. I don't love that's our mid-December starting rotation signing.
Yeah, I would love. I really like Waka. I really like Waka at this price. I would like Waka at this price and Morton at 15 mil also.
All right.
there's room to add another starting pitcher if he's a good one, it would be nice to have more good pitchers.
And what I also don't like about this signing is the last couple podcasts from our site, when they circled the drain almost on the starting pitcher market, Chris Archer comes up a lot, which is really fun. And it would have been nice to bring him back. But at this point, if you've already committed what should be the fifth spot in the rotation, considering the third spot open and then maybe thinking this as being your fifth spot, you need to be really right if you're going to try and go get Chris Archer, who is coming back from a rare injury that doesn't have a lot of history of people coming back strong from.
Yeah, I think Walker and Archer are really similar sort of risk reward types here. That there's a top half of the rotation pitcher in there, but there's no certainty that you're actually getting that. And I mean, maybe having two of them mitigates that risk some.
If you only need
to hit on both of them.
You know, and also, what if this is me going galaxy brain? Okay, Chris Archer's agent. If I'm Chris Archer's agent and I can get Desclafini $6 million in San Francisco, I look at the Rays and say your floor is $5 million, right? Because the taxes, right? Just change the tax scenario and then say I want at least $5 million for Chris Archer. Well, then Eric Neander sets the injured pitcher market at $3 million. What does that do to Archer's market, and could that bring him back into that? That's just conspiracy theory, right? But
I think it definitely brings, like, because of the risk component, it is setting it lower. I mean, the problem with the Rays isn't just money at this point. It's roster spots. Like, there's a lot of pitchers who need a shot and not enough space to give it to all of them.
Yeah.
And that makes it hard to spend on sort of these marginal risky pitchers.
And worst case scenario, let's say the Rays get into a position where, I don't know, they've got a true number three on the roster somehow. Let's say they made a trade and someone else has slotted in and you're like, yeah, that's a 3-4 to go alongside Yarbrough. We feel good. And then the rotation looks like Snell, Glasnow, acquired player Yarbrough, open. And you might have Waka in-house, but you can also still go get Archer. And if you're comfortable with the price point and the team that you've put together, one of those can become a bulk guy for you. It's not the end of the world if Waka ends up being number six in the rotation and slides into a bulk role.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the end in the world of the world, because it's good to have good pitchers in that. But I do think you probably want to be careful here of setting a precedent where if you tell a pitcher that they're coming in here to start,
yeah,
and then don't give them that opportunity, like that's a wrap that the Rays could easily fall into, because there are people who like worry about the manipulation of player value. I think it's probably worth being careful and not appearing that you are doing that.
And the Rays are aiming for the playoffs again. This doesn't feel like a signing that does that, but a lot of the interviews today have circled on that Waka is one of four rookie ALCS NLCS MVPs ever alongside Randy Arozarena. He has the playoff experience from his time with the Cardinals. He is a veteran because he's pitched for 8 seasons, and you know, from the Rays' perspective, the pitching staff is impressionable, and you need someone with the right character and mindset to come in and say, we are a contending team and we're going to get after it. And, you know, to take the Rays at their word, they've done that homework and they feel like Waka is one of the few players, the few veterans they were happy to bring in who had that playoff experience, that had that all-star capability.
Every player that the Rays have pulled out of the Cardinals organization,
sensibility,
one way or another recently, has turned out very well. So like if we get another Pham, another Arozarena, just add Walker to that, more of those.
St. Louis South, let's go. All right, well, Ian, thank you so much for hopping on. It's interesting to think about what Walker will be, and I'm sure we'll have more analysis on the site soon. So everyone, thank you for listening.
Great. Good to see you all.
We'll be right back.